Hey everyone, I want to welcome you all to another episode of the Focus Hunting Podcast. Before we get going with this episode today, I want you to turn this off. Hold on, I know you guys are eager to turn this off, but let me tell you why first. I want you guys to go to YouTube. In that top right corner, you're going to see a little search window. Type in iHunter in that window. Actually, hold on, back up a bit here. First, I want you guys to download the iHunter app. You guys can pick it up wherever you get your apps. Once you guys download it, I want you to purchase your zone or your zones that you guys hunt in. Then you guys can go to YouTube, type in iHunter, then click on the tutorial video completed by Mark Steenroos. He's the guy we're going to be talking with on this episode. He created the damn thing, and he's going to bring you up to speed on what the heck we're talking about on this episode. Okay, you guys good? Let's get after it then. Well, this sucks. Right, so I kind of feel like you've been trying to get at this for a while here.
Yeah, it's interesting how a pandemic and a move across country and all those kind of things can affect scheduling.
Yeah, well, that's a big move, man. Nova Scotia. Why Nova Scotia?
We don't have any like family out here, but we do have friends out here from a trip we did 4 years ago. So on my son's maternity leave year, so my wife was off work for the year, so we drove across Canada, stayed in Nova Scotia for 8 months, and then drove back across. And we just loved it out here. Like, it was just an adventure, and it's just a pretty fantastic place to live if you as long as you have work. Wherever you're at. So
yeah, well, I guess you have that, eh?
Yeah, and we're on another mat leave right now. So my third kid, my daughter Vera, was born in the summer, and we figured kind of same thing. Let's make use of this mat leave year and kind of figure out where we want to land long term.
Oh yeah, three kids. That's right on. That's a houseful. That's what I got over here. Yeah.
So yeah, it sounded like we've got a pretty similar setup going on in terms of work-life balance and all that kind of stuff. And it's cool to see.
Yeah. So how long have you guys been planning on the move out to the coast?
Actually, extremely short notice. We were houses hadn't really been selling in our area of Calgary recently. And with the economy I was going, we just we were due for a move, and so we listed the house, and it just sold immediately, within 2 days. And so we had to make some big decisions, and so we just started looking for where we could get a cool, like a just a nice rental place in a variety of cities. We were looking in Powell River, BC. We were looking out here, a few other places like Nelson as well, and you know what? The markets are just crazy right now. It's really hard to find good accommodations in these awesome places because as more people can work from home, more people are making moves like that and kind of living where they want to be rather than where they need to be for work.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you get any hunting in this fall?
Yeah, I did get the fall in. When I say short notice, I mean really short notice. Like, we did the move, we sold the house in December. So all of my big game seasons were pretty much done. And we moved out here in like a 2 week period of time. So so I did get, I got quite a bit of elk hunting in and a little bit of whitetail hunting. I only connected with a whitetail during rifle season. Basically, first buck I saw, I took because... you know, I've got three kids at home and one of which was a newborn, and I wasn't wanting to, push my luck in terms of like waiting for the biggest buck or anything like that. So yeah, I was happy with that.
Where do you do your elk hunting? Up north?
I have hunted in northern Alberta. We also have a little bit northwest of Edmonton as well. And then, mostly southwest of Calgary though. Mostly for archery hunting anyways. It's somewhere you can get out in 40 minutes from where I was living in Calgary and just make day trips all the time. And I found that I kind of had to switch to that model once the kids were in the picture, is just work on figuring out ways that you can hunt close to home and doing a quick day trip.
Yeah. Do you use the iHunter app?
Occasionally, yeah.
So you're a bow hunter as well?
Yeah, I'm definitely not like an exceptional bow hunter, but I've been hunting with archery equipment for maybe 8 or 9 years, and yeah, I definitely prefer it. It gives you basically just gives you more, way more time in the field and at different distances and different strategies at play, and it you know you always end up closer to animals than you will with a rifle, and yeah, I just like the experience. But I
Yeah.
always pick up a rifle once it switches over to rifle season. I'm not like a glutton for punishment or anything.
Yeah, my brother lives out in Alberta, so if he didn't he picked up archery hunting when he moved out to Alberta, just because if he didn't, he wouldn't get a very long hunting season too.
In parts of the province, it triples the time your active hunting season, so it's well worth it.
Yeah. So what are you gonna hunt out in Nova Scotia? Moose, I guess?
There is a little bit of moose hunting in Cape Breton, like the northern part of Nova Scotia, but it is on draw, so I don't think I would be getting anything there. But whitetail hunting is quite good in the area,
Oh, is that
and
right?
yeah,
Nice.
and actually, right where I'm at is kind of it seems to be like I don't know the province that well yet in terms of hunting. I've hunted here a week last time I was out here because I was a non-resident and I could hunt under my friend's host license. But this time I'll be a resident, so I can, you know, hunt a full season. There's bear hunting in the fall and whitetail deer hunting for the rest of the season. And I think in my area, I think I can take 2 deer, and they can be antlered or antlerless. So there's definitely some opportunities out here.
Yeah, he'll get a lot of fishing opportunities out there anyway, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. We're still trying to get the lay of the land in terms of where we're going for fishing and stuff, and I'm trying to find something, you know, for the family to set up some sort of a camp or small cabin or something out here so that we can yeah, experience what Nova Scotia really has to offer and, you know, get a ton of time at a lake set up with, you know, we brought our canoe out here and you know, we can do a lot of day trips to a ton of public land that's out here as well, but it would be nice to have something that's just super convenient and easy for the kids to get out on a daily basis, at least during the summer.
Yeah, well, that's cool, man. I've never been out to the East Coast, but definitely like to make it out there. I know it's got some pretty neat scenery, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does. You know, we coming from Western Alberta and into BC, spending lots of time in BC as well. Like, you know, it's something to write home about there as well, right? Like, it's a pretty exceptional place to live. But I find that everywhere across Canada really is. They just all have different things to offer, and yeah, just a more of a variety than what you get when you stay in one region.
Yeah, I hear you, man. So maybe we should get you to give yourself an introduction so the people know who's talking.
Yeah, for sure. We skipped right over that, didn't we? But yeah, my name is Mark Stenners. I run the iHunter app. It's basically mapping software for your phone or for your computer that simplifies or at least summarizes a lot of the regulations regarding hunting in the jurisdiction that you're actually hunting in. So, you know, we've got province-specific apps or versions of the apps that give you season summaries, give you the ability to kind of replace your GPS by, you know, it shows you all the hunting zone boundaries, allows you to drop waypoints with, you know, 40 or 50 different waypoint icons. You can do GPS breadcrumb tracking just like you would with a handheld GPS. You can cache all of your maps, so you can have a bunch of different satellite-based maps, topographic maps, and you can pre-cache all that stuff ahead of time. And then, like, one of the biggest things, I guess, that people use it for in a lot of different regions is for land ownership. Just figuring out land ownership, like, where is the crown land? Where's the huntable public parks? Where are there restricted discharge areas? And, you know, what are the actual private land property boundaries? So we do have options in the app in most provinces and regions where you can see, you know, all that and more level of detail on the maps. Basically, anything we can get our hands on for boundary data restrictions, that kind of stuff, we have tried to make available in the app and then provided a lot of ways for people to add their own content if what we have built in doesn't meet their needs.
The app definitely has a lot of lot going on for it. I don't think we'll get into everything, but so you're the founder of the app. How long were you messing around with this thing before it kind of became a thing?
Well, it actually, like many things in the software world, like you get a very minimal product out and out the door and get it out for feedback. So I think the first version of the product I worked on for maybe 30 days and then just got it in front of a bunch of people. I actually went out to big box hunting stores and just talked to random people in store and approached them with like little postcards and just discussed the idea with them. And you know, we got 3,500 users within, you know, the tailing 4 to 6 weeks of hunting season. So it started at the beginning of September and you know, we got kind of a half season worth of feedback, and it was enough to know that people wanted what we were proposing at the time, and this was just in Alberta. And so yeah, I actually like quit my job, or at least went down to a few days a week so that I could continue working there and actually earning a little bit of money and started building out the product.
Oh yeah, when did this all take place? What year?
This was in 2012, so
So you've been doing it
yeah,
quite a
eight
while,
or
eh?
9 years. Yeah.
Yeah, right on. So were you married at the time when you started the iHunter app?
Yeah, just married. I guess we married in 2011, and had been together for 5 or 6 years at that point. So yeah, it was, but I hadn't started a family yet. So it was as I was in the process of quitting my job, and you know, throwing away the stability that we you know have been working towards. You know, my first daughter was being born, and then it seems kind of like milestones as the kids came. There was always big changes, like we did the Nova Scotia trip out here last time, and now again, and yeah, it's nice to kind of correlate that.
Yeah, so was your wife on board when you told her you're gonna quit your day job and be a full-time iHunter owner?
Yeah, I think that she trusts me a lot, and she you know, looking at the opportunity and just the flexibility that could come with a successful trial of something like this. Like, you know, we didn't have kids yet, and you know, when I first started doing it, and by the time that we knew we were having kids, you know, there was at least promise. Like, we saw that people liked what we were doing and what we were providing, and you know, as long as I was able to solve some of the key problems and be able to expand the app out of like one province and build more of a business rather than just a hobby project. I think she saw that there was potential there, and she trusted my judgment on it.
So in 2012, that's quite a while ago, and I mean, things are a lot different than they are today. Was there a lot of competition out there, like, when you started?
Well, there still really isn't a lot in specifically what we're doing in Canada, at least. There is some, like in BC, for example, there is a Hunt Buddy, and you know what? They started right around the same time as well. I think that they had started Hunt Buddy BC basically the same season as I re released iHunter Alberta. But you know, it was pretty clear that if you're doing one and you're putting in the engineering effort into like building a product like that, if you can just get copies of the other data and do the kind of incremental work of other provinces, like why wouldn't you expand and build into other provinces? And so, you know, I started doing that. I don't think Hunt Buddy BC expanded because I think he actually has another job as well. Like, you know, I put all my chips into this and decided to like grow it across the country.
You started it out in Alberta, and then where'd you go from there?
Yeah, BC, and then I just started working across the country in some order. I can't remember exactly, depending on data availability. So lots of provinces are really awesome about making their data open, and other provinces are really difficult to work with. And you know, slowly we got more and more on board. There's still a few that we're working on. We may add Newfoundland, and I'm not sure if Northwest Territories really needs it, but since we've done the Yukon now, there is some interest up there.
Oh yeah, what about down in the US?
Yeah, we are down there, or we currently do have apps down there. We're actually just in the process of discontinuing those and just focusing on Canada. And
Yeah.
you know, part of the reason for that is their market down there is really well served. Like they have a number of dedicated companies with you know, 100 plus employees working on products that are just for the US. And you know, we've had these products down there, but without spending the types of marketing dollars kind of required to gain traction, yeah, we just weren't going to be competing against big guys like that unless we wanted to go that route as well. And that's not really what we're shooting for. Like, we are shooting for a lifestyle business that is awesome for all of us that are working on it, so that we can have the flexibility that we love and enjoy, and be able to focus on family and things like that in addition to running a business. And you know, I don't want to be managing, you know, huge teams. That being said, we did just hire a new developer, somebody that I've worked with for 15 plus years on various other projects, and just an exceptional guy. So I'm really excited to have him joining the team, and yeah, we should be able to bring some cool stuff this year.
I imagine the United States, it's probably a pretty crowded market. I know iHunter, they're pretty big and are probably pretty hard to compete with down there. I mean, that's a pretty big company.
You said iHunter is pretty big down there.
I meant Onyx, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple down there. Onyx is definitely one of the big ones, and you know, they started in a very similar way to us, like, you know, out of a garage, couple guys working together, and they started making paper maps and SD card chips, actually, for handheld GPS devices. And I think they switched to the mobile phone stuff kind of the year after, like maybe 2013 or something like that. But yeah, there is a lot of competition down there, and a lot of funding, and a lot of, you know, it's big business, and they do have a bigger market. And quite frankly, Canada is underserved. Like, we don't have the level of open data that the US does for land ownership, for things like that. So we have more privacy in a lot of cases, but it makes it quite challenging for hunters to be able to cost effectively find out who owns property. And, you know, the results of that can be opportunistic trespass and poaching, when, you know, for people that aren't able to figure out in a convenient manner how to access a piece of land, sometimes people take risks and take liberties and do trespass. And I think that if we had better tools or better access to data to make that clearer for people, you know, we could really move the needle on those types of non-intentional or nefarious trespass.
Yeah. Do you ever worry about those bigger guys that are down in the States, like Onyx and that, moving up into Canada, trying to take over your ground?
Yeah, like, that's something that totally could happen. Like, I mean, that's what competition is. You know, I think that competition is a good thing. Like, we've encountered that here as well. Like, I think the year or 2 years after I'd released iHunter, someone came out with basically, you know, a bit of a clone of it, but called it iHunt Alberta. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and you know, but
creative.
Yeah, exactly. But that developer, he had a reason for that. He also ran the iFish line of apps, so he was just getting into another market. And you know, I don't blame him for that. Like, I mean, it's healthy competition. It did really give us a kick in the butt and remind us that, like, you know, we're here to serve our customers and produce the best product that we can. And as long as we continue to do that, I hope that, you know, our existing customers would be loyal to us, or at least just use the best product for them. Ultimately, I think that we have a really awesome product. Like, I think that it stands up with all those other guys. The difference is in the, to me anyways, in the marketing dollars and the and the access to data and the size of the team that they want to run with, right?
Right. Did you've never been approached to sell iHunter by any of the bigger guys?
Not from any of those specific guys, but yeah, like, there have been approaches, but you know, that's not something that I'm looking for, to be honest. Like, we really love running this. We've got an awesome team. Yeah, it's a great lifestyle business and provides me a chance to connect with so many awesome people in the hunting industry and in other industries. It just gives you an opportunity to actually have an effect on people. Mm-hmm. Because the tools do get used by a lot of people. Like, I think we've got 100,000 active users in Canada, and that feels pretty good to know that, like, a product that you've worked on and helped create actually has an effect on people's day-to-day success in hunting. Like, it's not a huge role, but it can help.
No, it's I know what you're saying. I mean, I have a business too, and it's hard to give up something that you fathered. I mean, you just, you put so much hard work and sweat into it. It's just something you don't let go easy, that's for sure. You mentioned you hired a new developer. How many guys you got working over there full time now?
Full time, this will make us four. I've got three employees and a contractor, and then we've got a few part time staff that help us out from time to time. But like the core team has always been, or has been for the last 4 or 5 years, myself and my brother Chad. And Chad joined me, during my last Nova Scotia trip when I was trying to taper back a little bit so that I could, be on more of a paternity leave and actually spend time, a lot more time with the kids. And I just needed help, right? And he's been, just exceptional and just holds the whole thing together. Yeah, it's great to have him working with me. And then Eric, like I said, he's just a great, great friend and unbelievably smart and talented developer that is going to help us a lot.
Oh, yeah. Those guys still back out in Alberta?
Yeah, those guys are in Alberta. And then we do have another guy that helps us out whose name is Carlos. And he does a lot of data entry and other items like that and helps us with a lot of our GIS and mapping.
Yeah. So do you guys, I guess I imagine you do. I imagine there's a busy season. I imagine the fall, you're pretty swamped. You guys have to answer daily calls during like the fall hunting season?
Yeah. We are very seasonal, but it's seasonal for different types of work, I suppose. The fall, you're right. It turns to support a lot. So we get a lot of, luckily we don't get a lot of phone calls because phone calls, they're really difficult to handle and they're not, it's not scalable, right? Like you can't have a 20 minute conversation with every customer when it's just us doing it. Right. So you're getting personal service from us, but email is always better in terms of actually solving people's problems because it's always repeatable and both of us can see or all of us can see kind of the types of problems that are coming in rather than having to get summations via after phone calls and stuff like that. So just out of convenience, emails are awesome. We love getting them. But yeah, we get a ton in the fall. And then the rest of the year is when we get the chance to actually review what we did well for the year and what we want to work on and improve for the upcoming year. And then it's development time for, 6 to 8 months and trying to get everything polished off for the new hunting season.
Yeah, I guess it's probably a constant chore trying to keep up with the ever-changing dynamics of everything,
Yeah, exactly. Regulation summaries, they change every year and you've got to process those. It's quite a manual job. And then there's a lot of it's data updating is the big thing and making sure that you're getting new, fresh copies of all of the different types of data and running them through, getting them into the pipeline to get included into the app.
Because that's one thing you guys have in your app too, is the regs that in BC anyway, I mean, I haven't looked at any of the other provinces, but are they all the same? Do you have the regs available in every province?
Yeah, exactly. So we build in an offline version of the regs so that, if you have iHunter, you've got a copy of the full regulations as well. There's also links into other key resources that are online or as PDF resources in the app. So there is a resources section that you can get to all of that kind of stuff. And yeah, we're trying to package as many kind of key resources that you would need either in the field or when you're doing your research at home. You can use the website, which is just web.ihunterapp.com. So you can actually look at it on your laptop and, add waypoints and do drawings and plan routes into places online. And then all those waypoints and drawings are on your phone later when you're in the field.
So are some provinces easier to work with than others? I imagine BC must be a pain in the ass to work with. Just, I know what it's like with our regulations and our LEHs and all that. It takes forever for...
Timing wise, it can be a challenge, but every single state or province has timing issues where, they don't hit deadlines and or release things somewhat inconsistently. But, once you kind of get the idea of when they're going to come out, it's more a matter of just spending the time to look over everything and comb through all the changes and update all of the data from there. So we are doing a lot of that manually. It is manually reviewing changes in the documents. Oof. And identifying things. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's the only, when you're doing it for so many, there isn't any sort of standardized format, and how these are put together is more like how magazines are put together than it is like an official legal document. It's from what I've heard, it's, you know, it's post-it notes from Fish and Wildlife or Ministry of Natural Resources or whatever the department is, and sometimes things are getting pieced together at the last minute. So it can be, that is a very manual process, but BC in general is actually fantastic to deal with. Anytime you have a question for conservation, there's always somebody willing to talk with you about it, and they provide all of their data for free, like without paying licensing fees. Some areas of the country were paying multi thousand dollar contracts every year. Or
kidding, you figure that would just be all public access. I mean, anybody can get it anyway. I mean, what's the big deal?
Yeah, but it's different private public partnerships where, like for example, in Ontario, there's a company that does all of the property mapping, like so the actual boundary data mapping. It's not provincial; it's like a private contractor, I guess.
Oh yeah.
And so they do have the rights to then redistribute that data to third parties, for licensing fees. And so, you know, we have to build those into our prices. And that's why like Ontario's public land subscription is $40 and BC's is $10.
Gotcha.
We try our best to keep our costs as low as we possibly can to the end user. And BC and a lot of other provinces that make everything freely available, like they're fantastic to work with. It's great to be able to get that stuff. And then we can actually get things to people cost effectively and don't have to charge $40 a year for something and just have to pass on those fees, right?
$40 is still pretty good. I mean, probably not going to be too long until these app, like your app, replaces the GPS, because I don't even use my GPS anymore. I just have my phone. I mean, I have my phone.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, like I agree that $40 a year isn't a ton, but at the same time, people's expectations for what apps do and whatnot, like, you know, you still have to find a like that sweet spot that people feel that it's valuable enough. I know that our power users, the guys that use it all the time, they would probably pay way, way, way more than that for the features that they actually get out of it. But we like the fact that we can make it accessible to pretty much everybody. So even a new hunter who's just starting getting into hunting, they're already outlaying so much money to buy equipment and pay for fuel and do all those kinds of things. And what we really want is people to be hunting legally and ethically and having access to the information they need. So iHunter presents, you know, a lot of that information. We do the best job we can, but we never suggest that should be the only thing people are using. We want all these new hunters to be able to have access to this information, but we also, we definitely want people to also be reading the full regulations document and spending time learning from peers. If they don't have mentors, it would be like, I'm still supportive of all of that stuff. Like iHunter is not a replacement for the knowledge and camaraderie and whatnot that we that as hunters hopefully we get when we start into this type of hobby or lifestyle.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's an app will never replace experience. I get you. So I think I kind of fall into that hardcore user demographic, but. Where do you find your sales mostly? Just with strictly hunters? Are you guys, do you have regular Joes buying this? What about conservation offers and stuff? Like you find it's very popular with them?
It is very popular with them, but we actually, we don't widely advertise this, but we basically try to comp all conservation officers, like get them copies, especially for anything that we don't owe royalty fees for. We give for free to officers of any jurisdiction if they work for the ministry or the Fish and Wildlife branch or whatnot in that region. And the main reason for that is that we want professional review of what's being offered. And at least in Alberta, like Alberta, it's really taken off. Like it's basically the standard tool that they use. And as a result of that, if there are any mistakes that we make, they get caught very early. If there are any discrepancies in the data that the province provides, usually it gets found really early as well. So we get that advantage. And then we just get feedback, suggestions for features, mainly just things that they're using it very similar to how hunters are using it. I know a lot of them use it to manage all of their case info, all that kind of stuff, because they can use it just like we do. You know, you're making notes and scouting areas and keeping track of all of that data. And they do that too. We have, there is also interest from other business verticals like real estate, and a lot of delivery drivers, like rural delivery drivers and emergency response, are using it. We're in a bit of a decision mode here in terms of, do we broaden, maybe release other versions of the same type of software, but with a more approachable, like non-hunter theme to the data.
Catering towards like just the backpackers and hikers and stuff like that, that sort of demographic, people who aren't necessarily interested in hunting. I get you.
Yeah, we are getting use from non-hunters in that field, like the rec user hunters, and that's something I'm kind of okay with, to leave the hunt, like for serving that market, I'm kind of okay with leaving it under the iHunter brand or whatnot. Honestly, a little bit, because we are hunters, and the reason that this exists is hunting, and the reason that our wildlife populations are strong and healthy also is kind of due to hunting, and it keeps a little bit of the visibility onto the fact that the things that we all enjoy out in the wild, we have a shared responsibility for keeping those places pristine and well cared for.
So who came up with the name iHunter?
I do think that was myself. I did start it on my own. I briefly had I brought in a co-founder, and we parted ways amicably, only just because I wanted to go full in, and he had just gotten a really nice day job that he was comfortable with. So,
gotcha. Has he ever called up and asked him to get back in?
Yeah, we've worked together lots since then. We do lots of contract work, and everything's all good that way. But yeah, he's got a really good gig going for himself, and I think he also knows that he is welcome back anytime if he's ever interested.
So, do you ever get any mugs calling in or emailing in, frustrated that that the spot they've hunted for years, there's now somebody sitting in it?
Yeah, there is feedback like that. There's feedback about spots being taken. There's feedback from leaseholders. Like in Alberta, there's a leaseholder system where the leasee or the renter of the land from the provincial government, they do have some rights to the land, and they can restrict access, but they also have to grant reasonable recreational access, and they have to field calls and emails and in order to enforce any sort of restriction. And so they get inundated with calls, especially near to the cities. And so we definitely feel the pain of the increased demand on landowner resources or landowner leaseholder type resources. I think that do hit a little bit of a pain point of we have a lot of hunters, and when hunters do have access to data, it's not all sunshine and roses, right? Like it causes pain points in some of the systems that are currently in place and have been in place for a long time. And like, if you know, if at your fingertips at any time you can identify who owns a parcel of land, that landowner might get a lot more calls than he normally gets. On the flip side, hopefully those same people that would have maybe not been able to get a hold of that person to get a definitive answer on access, at least hopefully they're able to more easily, and landowners can get their private property rights respected. But hunters as well, like they might know of these small tiny parcels of kind of hidden or somewhat landlocked but legally not landlocked parcels of land, and can figure out ways into them. And in some cases, unfortunately, you know, what we present in iHunter could be misinterpreted by somebody and think that they can have legal access and they don't. We're not lawyers. We try to present the data, but like data can also be interpreted incorrectly, and that can be mistakes in data and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully it's working for people. And when we do get feedback, we always take it very seriously and investigate every issue. And if we have cases where people are blaming the app for something, then we obviously we investigate that immediately and work with landowners and whatnot to confirm that the data that we're presenting matches the records they have, so that there aren't actually any inconsistencies, and that the problems that are happening are more interaction problems and people's choices rather than the data that we're like the data and tools that we're giving them. We want those to be accurate, and you can't eliminate conflict.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, walking in the backcountry, you often come across, I mean, this has happened to me tons of times, and over the years you're walking in the backcountry and you come across a fence and you never think anything about it. You just think, okay, well, somebody put that fence up there, so that's their land on the other side, and it says no trespassing, so that must mean that's their land. And then you have access to your app. It clearly shows that they kind of claimed a little bit more land than they legally have. So I myself have never had any conflict with a landowner, but I know guys who have, and they've just pulled out your app and said, "Hey, well, no, look," and then they kind of just grumble because they know they're in the wrong. So.
It is very interesting, like when discrepancies like that can be found. But I do also want to urge people to, like, even in those conflict situations, like, to show great respect for those landowners, because there may also be cases where things are incorrect, right? Like the title mapping system of various provinces are not always correct. Sometimes titles have been transcribed from paper documents, and there's manual error and things because properties haven't been sold for, many, many decades, or in some cases hundreds of years if they've been through a family lineage. So there can also be just honest mistakes in terms of like a family that's always farmed an area and has always farmed up to a certain amount. And again, because land hasn't passed through sale, like had land sales, et cetera, it's never looked into. And so sometimes those kinds of things are honest mistakes, and hopefully they can be resolved that way. But I know that conflict does often arise as a result of just visibility into data.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate though, man. I don't know. It's whenever I'm out, it seems to be bang on. One thing I really like is the little blue dot that follows you around wherever you go. I'm guessing this is because all phones have a GPS built into them.
Yeah, phones do have a dedicated GPS receiver. So even when you turn your phone onto airplane mode, you can still actually get GPS location updates. So it's not tied to cellular, but if you do have your cellular turned on and you have a cellular connection, the cell tower triangulation will speed up the process of getting like a really good fix on your GPS position because it'll figure out which satellites to be connecting to, et cetera. So it's very similar to having, any sort of handheld GPS device. The receiver might be a little bit smaller. So like if you're in like a tight canyon or something like that, you might not get as good of GPS as you would with a dedicated device, but it's pretty reliable.
It's
But you
pretty.
do have to watch the accuracy as well. So if you open up the location services tray, it's the second button on the bottom in iHunter. It'll actually tell you the current accuracy of your location. Or
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
do we even have that on the main screen now? I can't remember.
You know, like I said, I use this thing all the time. There's so many things on here, I don't even know what they're for, but man, it
Yeah,
sure
well
is.
then we're not making it clear enough, obviously. And that's one of the things we're working on in this off season, is a little bit of a UI update to make things a little bit clearer as to what is available, and then also some additional help documentation and tutorials. We do
Right.
have tutorials available on the website for a bunch of the advanced features, and we have like a general walkthrough video and things like that. But
Oh
we
yeah,
need to
maybe I'll
do a
have to check
better.
that out.
Yeah, definitely. When you first open up the app, it does give you that walkthrough video or the option to view it, but you can always get to it in the info button in the app. There's like a link to the FAQ page, and at the bottom of that page are a ton of videos, including the full walkthrough video. Or you can just go to iHunterApp.com and click on FAQ.
Yeah, well, I'll check that out. For sure. So when I was hunting antelope in Alberta this year, which is a pretty interesting way of hunting, we drove on the roads until we seen a herd of antelope, and then my buddy I was with, he was hosting me. He'd pull out the iHunter app, check the property, and the phone numbers and all that information would come right up on the app. And he would then dial the phone number on the app and call and ask if we could hunt on it. And that blew me away how easy that was. Is that something coming from Alberta that you felt was a necessity to have? Because I know BC doesn't have that option.
Well, first of all, just like clarify what that actually is. It's not for private landowners. So that's for leaseholders only. So again, the public or yeah, the provincial grazing leases in the province are under a recreational access legislation that means that the leaseholders do have to allow reasonable recreational access as long as there's not a reason preventing them. So there's like a few five or six key reasons why a leaseholder could prevent access, including things like if there's a regional fire ban on, if they have cattle actively grazing on the field, if they're doing work on the mending fences or something that day, they can deny access. And sometimes they can get other restrictions approved by the minister. But in the general case, if they want to enforce any of those restrictions, they need to also list contact information with the province. And then that's integrated into iHunter so that it's available for people on their devices so they can actually see those boundaries while they're in the field. Because the province does provide a web mapping tool, but it doesn't really work well on mobile devices or work well without cell reception and all those kind of things. So by us being able to provide that as part of our Alberta Public Lands subscription, yeah, you do get access to the phone numbers for the leaseholders in the province, but not the private landowners. Private
Okay.
landowners, you can get individual landowner maps that will show, like for like county by county, you can purchase land ownership maps, and those landowner maps will show who owns the different parcels, like the quarter sections of land. It'll have those landowners labeled, but you don't get their personal phone numbers or anything like that.
Oh yeah, gotcha. That for the guys out in Alberta and Saskatchewan, I imagine it's probably the same. That definitely cuts the guesswork and door-to-door work down quite a bit.
Yeah, like it definitely puts more information at your fingertips, for good or for bad. And like I said, there are trade-offs with that. And although I think that as hunters, we would always want that, I do see that some landowners would be resistant to having, their personal information more accessible, even though like the reason that legitimate hunters want that information is to be respectful and be able to ask permission and have like a good engagement with the landowner. Obviously, yeah, like the harder it is to get a hold of somebody, usually the worst kind of outcome.
Yeah, that was one of the major struggles my brother found when moving out to Alberta was finding some place to hunt. Because I mean, here in BC we have 94% public land, and I'm not sure what the numbers are in Alberta, but he found it quite challenging to find somewhere to hunt. So,
Well, it's about 60-40 in Alberta. It's just that if he's in antelope country, there's very little like open range public land. Like there is grazing leases like we just discussed, but most of the public land is, in the west or in the north.
yeah, no, he's in the Red Deer area. So but yeah, so you mentioned you guys are constantly working on upgrading the app in the down season. Do you guys keep an eye on what your competitors are coming out with to kind of stay up to date with the advancements in technology?
Not really. Like we more pay attention to our customers and what people are asking for. Sometimes that is cross-pollinated, I guess. Like, if people are seeing what some of the competitors in the US are delivering, and they also want those features, sometimes they'll write in. There aren't a lot of things that stand out to me. One of them that does, though, is like some of the 3D view mapping of some other software packages. There's FatMaps, which is, I believe it's just a desktop-based system. It might have a mobile app as well, but the 3D experience that they give with texturing of satellite imagery on top of 3D models is really good. And I think that they do a good job of helping people that hunt in variable terrain areas like the Rocky Mountains, for example. Like I do think that it helps a lot to be able to visualize those slopes in like a more realistic way. I think looking at topo maps, if you're skilled at looking at topo maps and satellite map in combination, because you can do that in iHunter, you can layer a topo map over top of a satellite map and see those topo lines, but that's not 3D and it's not the same experience. And you do have to have a different level of skill to read a topo map than you do to look at a 3D model.
Yeah. Is that something you guys are looking at, the 3D model?
It's something that we're considering. Like we've got a number of things on our kind of backlog right now. And, you know, depending on how quickly we can get Eric ramped up and which other, you know, features and improvements that we want to either drop or like it's something that we're looking at, but I don't know that it's going to be for this next season, but it is like on the roadmap in terms of like features that I recognize as being useful. I don't know that they need to be on all platforms, like whether they need to be on the web viewer or the mobile app or both. I'm not really sure of the use case. Like, do you really need 3D in the field?
That's a tough call because I mean, you're there, right? So you can clearly see there's a hill in front of you. You're walking up it.
But I do get that, you know, in the right circumstances, it could be useful. But I guess I do a lot of my research before I'm in the field, and then I apply it once I'm out there. So I do a lot of pre-scouting and a lot of figuring things out digitally just to give myself a good starting point. And then once I'm in the field, I'm kind of putting those pieces together and like matching up my my research data with like what's actually in front of me and trying to piece together or refine a plan, I guess, at that point.
Yeah.
And hopefully not while I'm hunting. Like hopefully, you know, I've been able to get out for some scouting trips and actually narrow down.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, the app is great and all, but it's you know, you still need to get out in the field and put your boots on the ground just to understand the landscape, because, you know, you can look at it all day, but until you actually get out there, things can be a little bit different. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's useful for things like definitely useful in the field for things like managing trail cameras. Like I do that lots, and I'll manage my spots based on color. So you can color code your waypoint, your trail cam waypoint icons to see where you've had trail cams in the past, where you actually move them to. So you're not, I've actually lost trail cams because like I forgot whether I actually moved it somewhere or whether I just thought I moved it somewhere, and then whether has somebody stolen it or did I actually move it? I'm not a very good inventory guy on things like that. So.
Oh man, I've lost a handful of trail cams out in the bush. Just totally. I don't know. I don't even get it. You're like, how can I lose it? But you swear somebody stole it, but you know nobody did. You just lost it. You freak.
Yeah, definitely could be the case.
Yeah. So earlier you mentioned second and third party software. Now I notice on your app, you got a small little Google sign down on it. I'm assuming that's because you use Google Earth as one of your layers on, or I guess the main layer. So is that free access for you guys, or is that something you kind of had to buy off them, or did you have to get into bed with them in using their software?
There's two different, so we do have Google as an option for a base map on Android phones. Google's web map system, like their component that we use for doing a lot of the web mapping, works really well. And that's just included as one of the features, as you get to use their satellite maps. But those maps are not cacheable in the same sense as some other maps. So we do include some other third-party maps that that we're allowed to cache and that are useful for people so that they can actually bulk download some data so that they actually have that data on their phone when they're in the field without cell reception. The Google Maps some data does get downloaded and cached, but our software is not in control of how much or when that cache is going to be cleared or whatnot. So it's a little bit more hit and miss in terms of you might have looked at it in the past, but it might not be there when you have no reception. So if you can use one of the maps that the other maps that's listed there that say cacheable, those are just other maps that are available. You can also find your own maps. There's tons of different satellite map providers out there that offer WMS or TMS web maps that you can then import into iHunter as your own base map. So yeah, the sky's the limit in terms of what you can put in there. We try to pre-populate with a few that are useful that we use ourselves. And yeah, I guess there's nothing stopping us from adding a few others. But yeah, if your question is, do we have to use Google components and Apple components and third-party stuff? Yeah, we do, because they do some of the heavy lifting. Like, it's a huge project on its own for just building all of the kind of app level stuff and the cache related stuff and the components to, like, actually, you know, run, like, choose where to get map tiles from and all that kind of stuff. But the base map component is provided by you know, Apple or Google, and then there's lots of software written on top of that to make it what it is.
Like I said, I'm not very good with technology, and the word cache is something it took me forever to figure out, and I don't know why I had such a hard time dealing with it, but it's funny because I'm not the only one who doesn't understand it. Do you think you could maybe simply break it down what cache means?
Yeah, for sure. Caching is just like saving remote sources of data locally on your phone. So a lot of maps are basically built up of just a bunch of different images that are kind of registered at locations on the map as a whole. So they're like tiles of images. And so if you're selecting, like, you know, a giant region of the province to download, like to cache or download or pre-download all of the private property boundary lines that are part of the public land subscription for BC, you would select that, you would manage the cache and select the region that you wanted to download and select the zoom level at which you would want to download up to. But every zoom level that you go deeper, it takes four times as much memory to save that layer as it did the previous layer. So it's a balance between how detailed of a map do you want to download? So what zoom level do you want to go up to for your pre-download, and how big of an area? And so the bigger the area, the deeper the zoom level. If you were trying to download the whole province, it would be gigabytes of data stored on your phone. And so, like, we actually hard limit people to 100 megabytes at a time, just because we want people to actually be cognizant of, like, they can do repeated downloads. They can continually do 100 megabytes at a time, 100 megabytes at a time. But if you just bulk download and try to do the whole province, you're going to totally bog down your phone, and you're going to be pissed at us for taking up so much much space. And it's going to just be, take a ton of resources to serve all that data up to you. But yeah, cache is just like a local copy of a remote resource. But maybe this is too technical, but, like, yeah, cache management is one of the hardest problems in any sort of computing software, because it's a balance between do you want to have that resource ready and able to go immediately without having to do any sort of internet access, but at the risk that the internet, like the remote resource, has actually changed and maybe there's more up-to-date data. So there's lots of stuff in the background that we can do to kind of update the cache or get new versions of data that's already been stored. But and we do a lot of that in the background.
Well, you definitely explained it better than I would be able to. So,
but maybe there is a better way to explain it, like offline available or something like that. And yeah, we're putting thought into all this kind of stuff right now. Cacheable, it makes sense to us. But you're right, there are lots of people that have questions about it. But I don't know if just like the terminology is the problem, or if we just don't have a good enough help system built into. Allow people to kind of discover the answers themselves.
Yeah, well, if anybody asks me now, I'm just going to tell them to watch the damn introduction video on your webpage.
Yeah, perfect.
So do you ever mess with paper maps anymore? Because I still use paper maps a ton. I mean, we're on any hunting trip, I always have a paper map of my area in my backpack. I don't know. It's just one of those things that I don't know if you can ever really replace a good paper map.
No, I like up until very recently, I've had a ton of paper maps, and I do use them for some things. More at home, like I would have maps of certain area, like of my key hunting areas. I would actually put up the wall map at home, and I would do some manual markup on that, and some phone numbers and things like that. Even though, yeah, I have most of that data also in iHunter. There's something more tangible about having it, right on your wall. I'm currently not doing that as I'm in Nova Scotia. I'm trying to figure out all these things, and basically, I'm trying to build the tools that would allow any hunter in my position to kind of find good properties. So I'm not using paper maps out here, but I am trying to solve some kind of big land ownership type problems out here.
Yeah, one thing I do with paper maps is I'll take a compass, you know, the compass that have the pencils in it, and I'll scale out like 1 kilometer, and I'll make a circle around all the roads, back roads maps,
Oh yeah.
just so I don't, I because I like to stay away from the roads, right? So, but on your, is that something you guys ever thought about doing? Is using part of the back roads maps in your app?
Yeah, so there's two different like do you mean Backroads Maps, like the Backroad
Yeah.
Mapbooks guys, like that brand? Yeah, they do have a map that's available that we could integrate into the app and offer it as for sale to the end users, and we have discussed that with them. My personal opinion is that iHunter already contains everything, or has all of the options to contain everything that they offer currently, but it's not all packaged perfectly. So, like Forest Service roads, for example, we don't currently have that as a layer in iHunter, but you can go to the Open Data BC website and you can get the Forest Service roads WMS layer, and you can add that into iHunter and add that as a layer.
Oh, no shit, eh?
Yeah, so there's lots of like we do have some tutorials on how to add your own map layers, and I think we actually even use the Open Data BC site as one of the examples in that video. But yeah, you can add your own map layers, so you can add in past forest burns or forest fire areas from past years. That's data is all available online. You could add in your Forest Service roads, or you could add in flow levels of rivers, or you could like there's kind of an
Wow.
unlimited number. Like you could add all the bathymetry data for all of the lakes in BC. There's kind of unlimited things that can be added, and it's more like I guess we're kind of battling, do we overwhelm people with just like a ridiculous library of all these things? And we could offer all of those. Yeah, and currently we just haven't got there in terms of like fleshing every province out with all of these different data layers, but we've provided the tools for people to add those if they want to.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to watch the damn tutorial on your webpage then, 'cause man, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is something though that we're lacking in terms of like, you know, we have some tutorials and they do have the basics in there, but like there are some level of advanced features that are hard to explain, and maybe we don't get there. We don't always have it done the best, right? So,
Yeah, so if there's something somebody's struggling with, they can just reach out, email you, and you'll kind of just walk them through it.
yeah, exactly. Email is always the best. And what we're trying to do now is we're kind of packaging up some of those common questions and issues and trying to get answers to them on the FAQ page. And hopefully, we can get to a point where we're not answering every email personally, and we can maybe point some people to the common FAQ answers.
One option you guys have on the app that I really like is you click on the region you're in, and it shows you what you're hunting in that area. Now, that's a pretty great idea. Actually, shows you what's open in that area and what you should
Oh
have eggs for.
yeah, the season summaries themselves like are inverted from what most regulations publish them as, like even the BC one, it will list a specific season, like 4-point bucks, or something, or whatever it is, or antlerless mule deer or whatnot, and then it'll list 4 or 5 different zones for that. But we kind of flip that on its head and say, no, or region 4-02. This is the full list of things that you're able to hunt for big game, predators, game birds. Because most people, you've narrowed things down to an area, or you're actually in an area, and that's what you care about is, what can I do now?
I thought it was a pretty clever idea.
Yeah, that was one of like the core features when we first started. Like when we first launched, we didn't have all the land ownership type stuff. It was a lot more basic. It was the wildlife management unit boundaries and season summaries, on top of things like sunrise, sunset calculators and waypoints and all that kind of stuff. But like the core of the app was season summaries and boundaries.
How many times do guys come up to you and say, man, I had this idea years before you came out with this app? How many times do you hear that?
I think it happened a couple times at the beginning, but I haven't heard it for a while, because I think that people have been using it for long enough. Like it's at that point where 8 or 9 years of usage, and a lot of people are just, I don't know, it seems like people are happy it's around. I know that, like you said, there's some friction with some people because, maybe it makes it a little bit too easy for people to, find these awesome spots to hunt. But at the same time, we gotta keep people coming into this this sport or this activity. If we don't continue to grow numbers or maintain numbers, like it's not going to be good for anybody that does this, right?
Yeah, man, you've been around, so you're creeping up on 10 years now.
Yeah, it'll be 10 years shortly, and I think that's a pretty decent milestone.
No doubt, man. I'm gonna ask you a question here, and you don't gotta answer, but do you ever feel guilty that you're making it too easy on folks?
Yeah, like I understand that thought.
And the only reason I ask is because I try to introduce the app to some older fellas, and they said no way that makes it too easy. So that's the only reason I brought it up.
I still don't find that it's easy. I don't know about, like, maybe they find it easy because that's they've got a lifetime of knowledge built up in them, and they've got their spots, and they've got their they have put in that work, and I do see that side of things. But the more and more people that have put in that work and have defined their areas and get upset at people when they encroach and don't share hunting spots with people, it just makes it harder. It makes it harder for those people. And those are the people that we want to learn about hunting and continue doing this activity. Like we want people to join, like to continue hunting. Like it helps all of us if we have more people that support and agree with hunting. And so I understand the logic there, but everybody's responsible for like their own what they become an expert in, what they invest their time in. And if people spend less time having to find out where they're legally allowed to hunt or finding a spot, hopefully they can spend more time learning how to shoot their gun or their bow, or learning, like maybe they could spend their time learning how to use a compass and map. Like I'm not saying that they're going to, but ultimately I think that it does make things more convenient for people, which, yeah. I don't know, like I can't help but thinking that that's still a good thing, because you can spend that time and energy solving a more difficult problem, right? That's what all advancements are about. They're reducing one variable so that you can focus on mastery of another, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's all good, man. I mean, I use the app. I don't give a shit what anyone says. I'm going to keep using it. I love it. So, I mean,
let me be clear. Ianter is not starting a fire for you if you're trapped overnight, or like you still need your bushcraft skills and. Those are all things like, that hopefully nobody is thinking that an app is going to solve.
Yeah, no. I mean, my wife's father, he was, he'd give it to me all the time, like all the time about, oh, you don't need all this fancy stuff to go hunt. You just got to man up and do it and all this stuff. And I'd always respond, oh, there was more game back when you were hunting. It was a lot easier and all this stuff. So No man, it's all good. It's a great app. I love it. Like I said, there's just too much great stuff on here. We're never gonna be able to go through it all, but what time is it out there?
It's just after 10 o'clock, so
Oh
I
yeah,
got a
man.
couple more hours of work or something to do. I got a new 3D printer that I'm trying to. It's like a laser engraver, CNC machine, and 3D printer. So I'm trying to carve out a little bit of time to try to get this thing up and running.
Oh well, you're a night owl. I'm usually in bed by 9 o'clock, but I get up at 4 a.m. So
There you go. Yeah, I don't get up at 4 a.m. I get up as late as possible, but with three kids, that's pretty early still. So
that's why I get up at 4 a.m.
yeah, exactly. I think we're just opposite ends of the candle doing the exact same thing, carving out a few hours to get things actually done.
Yeah, absolutely. But all right, man, I'm gonna let you go. It's been great chatting here today. And so where can folks find you and the iHunter app, and where can we download it?
Yeah, you can find iHunter on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. It's a free download on iOS, and then you just purchase the region that you want once you've downloaded the app. And on Android, there are individual apps that you buy on the store. You can also find it at web.ihunterapp.com. That's free to use. It's got all your management unit boundaries and other iHunter tools that come with the base product on mobile. And then you can decide from there if there's other add-ons that you want to buy, like the public and private land subscription or land ownership maps, depending on where you live.
Yeah. Okay, man.
And then, yeah, just info@ihunterapp.com if you have any questions or need help with anything. Chad or I will get back to you right away.
Yeah. Well, I think watch the damn tutorial first. That's what I'm gonna do. Try to figure some of this stuff out. But again, it's been great chatting, and hopefully we can hook up again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate the chat, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
You believe that? Wow. I guess it's all worth it.